In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh yeah, time to talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joining us here in studio. Welcome, sir.
Oh, thank you.
We were chatting during the break. You got to get back on the stage doing a little improv yesterday.
I did. Yeah, it was quite an experience. It's part of something. It's called Ready, Set, Go. Operating with in tandem with Penobscot Theater Company and Improv Acadia, where a group of improvisers, the second Sunday of the run of each main stage show there at PTC, a group of improvisers will sort of take over the stage and improvise a play on the set of whatever show is up. So right now it's Miracle on 34th Street, so that's the one we used. But going forward, it'll be whatever is up there. That's what we're going to use. And it was really fun. Like I was telling you, I had some anxiety because, again, I kept remembering, it's like, oh, so the last time I did this was February of 2020.
Wow.
And so it's like, oh. So I'm like, do I even remember how to do it? It turns out it is kind of like riding a bike. Like, if you go away for a while and come back, you will eventually remember how to do it. You might fall down a couple of times early on. Worked through it. It was a great group. Our friend Dennis Price was there. Jen Shepard and Lawrence Fingerhut of Improv Acadia. Amanda Eaton was part of it. And Andy Boldick, Bangor native, who is currently doing a lot of work with Second City out there in Chicago. So it was a nice sort of... grab bag of players. We came together, did a show last night, and people seemed to have a good time.
Nice.
So that's really all you can do.
That's great. I was telling you the story. I'm not going into too many details, but I wasn't feeling well. Ended up going to an urgent care thing over the weekend, and it always happens. You're not feeling great. You go there, and then you start feeling a little better.
Right.
Once you get there, I think part of it is you relax. You're like, well, someone, even if I fall down, someone can take care of me here. But, the nurse is checking all my vitals, and he goes, so when's the focus group going to do another show? I'm on death's door, and you're asking about
it. I mean, I'm sitting right here, man. Yeah. Like, read the room.
Actually, I appreciate that.
No, that's really nice. Actually, it's nice to know that we haven't been totally forgotten,
right?
By the cultural elite here in the city of Bangor.
Exactly. All right, we've got we run a little late because Tom Dreesen was he was talkative.
Oh man, that was so cool. That's a legend right there. Like and it's so awesome clearly very willing to share, which is delightful. Like it was. You always love those interviews where it's just like you ask a question and then you just sit back and it's like, okay, you're just going to go for a while. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Because here's the thing. No one cares about what the interviewer says.
No
interest.
Nope. Get out of the way.
Yep. I'm very much looking forward to listening to part two.
Yeah, some good Sinatra stories coming up tomorrow. But we've got four movies to talk about. Jeez, well, where do we begin?
Yeah, we'll spend a little bit of time on a couple that were, that don't necessarily need to be explored too thoroughly. We'll start with a movie called Bruised. It's on Netflix, currently streaming. Marks the directorial debut of Halle Berry, who also stars. It's a weird choice for a directorial debut, particularly for someone like Halle Berry. It is it's a drama based around mixed martial arts.
Okay. Didn't see that coming.
Right. She plays a sort of disgraced former MMA fighter named Jackie Justice, who was a rapid riser in the ranks, but, wound up having an experience where she basically attempted to flee the ring in the midst of a fight. And, that sort of torpedoed her career. Years later, she moves on. She's cleaning houses. Just generally not interested in getting back in the ring. That all changes when it turns out that the son that she left at his father's doorstep when he was an infant is coming back into her life due to tragic circumstances, and she finds herself struggling not only with the idea of becoming a mother, she's also sort of grappling with the idea of getting back into the ring and you know, at the behest of her manager slash boyfriend, as well as the owner of a frankly kind of shady MMA female driven MMA promotion, who decides he's going to cash in on her name recognition, get her a title fight against his champ, and you know, we'll go from there. She takes up with this wonderful trainer named Budokan, and you know, and that relationship develops. But again, she's basically constantly struggling to come true, you know, to come to terms with the realities of both her personal and professional lives. Look, I'm as big a sucker for an inspirational sports movie as the next guy, but only when they're done well. And this one doesn't quite work. You know, Halle Berry is incredibly talented, and you can see, like, she's giving her all in this performance, and you can see glimpses of the director she's going to be while you watch this movie, but it's just, it's tonally inconsistent, and the narrative's kind of a mess, and a lot of the performances are one note, not really particularly compelling. So it's one of those things where there are some good pieces there, like the fight choreography is really good, stuff like that. But for the most part, it just doesn't quite land. And so unless you are a Halle Berry completist or a really big MMA fan, you could probably give that one a miss.
All right. What's next?
So I watched a movie that we don't need to spend a lot of time on, but I found it delightful. It's called 8-Bit Christmas. It's on HBO Max. and it's, well, I mean, the easiest way, the elevator pitch for this movie was clearly something along the lines of A Christmas Story, but with Nintendo.
All right.
I mean, that's really it. I mean, right down to the framing device, where it's like you have a guy played by Neil Patrick Harris taking his daughter to you know, Christmas time at his mom's her grandmother's house. And he winds up telling her the story of the Christmas where he wanted nothing more in the world than a Nintendo Entertainment System. And we basically get to follow his adventures from, like, hanging out with and, you know, we all relate, hanging out with the jerky kid because he's the only one on the block who has a Nintendo. So you go over to his house, hang out with him, and then coming up with increasingly elaborate schemes to figure out how to get your hands on a Nintendo, trying to trick your parents into agreeing to do it. You know, getting involved in a wreath selling contest where the first prize is a Nintendo, and then frankly a full on Ocean's 11 style heist type thing where they develop this elaborate plan, he and the little boy and his friends, to basically you know, while on a school field trip to Chicago, sneak off the bus so he can get his hands on a Nintendo and back in time before anyone finds out. Again, it's no more complicated than that. It's delightful, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. But it's very lightweight. Like, there's nothing, you know, it's not the sort of movie that's gonna, you know, land in the Christmas time canon the way something like A Christmas Story has. But you know, the performances are pretty solid. They got a bunch of really talented kids. The young Neil Patrick Harris is played by a kid named Winslow Fegley, who's part of a sort of acting family. He's very good. His parents are his dad's played by Steve Zahn, who's very good.
Friend of downtown.
Right. David Cross pops up as a sort of Christmas toy black marketeer, which in a couple of scenes, which is a lot of fun. But again, like I said, it's very, very frothy, very light, some emotional beats. And as someone, you know, once you start dealing with like fathers and sons and stuff like that, like, I'm soft touch. So it's like, I'm always going to be affected by that. It's a really good time. It's, you know, it's not a movie you necessarily have to go out of your way to find, but, you know, if you're sitting around, you're in the holiday mood, and if you are of a certain age, as I am, someone who remembers that desperate longing for the Nintendo Entertainment System, you'll find something to like here.
We're talking movies with Alan Adams of The Main Edge on Downtown. What's up next?
I'm not sure which one I want to talk about first. Although, you know what? I'm going to do Encanto.
Okay.
The new Disney animation movie, the 60th Disney animation movie.
Wow.
You know, there's a lot, obviously, but when you put a number on it like that, you're just like, holy cow. This one, it's indicative of the sort of new direction that I think Disney is trying to go, more culturally inclusive, I think. This one is it revolves around a family in Colombia. Original songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda, because that's what you do with Disney movies now, is you hire Lin-Manuel to write, you know, to knock off, you know, eight songs and do your thing. It basically revolves around this the Madrigal family, this magical family that one day years ago, a sort of miracle happened. This candle was endowed with magical powers, which led to the building of a massive house, a sentient house, which is basically another character in the film, a delightful one, by the way, they call Cantita. So it's this family where when the children come of age, they're all granted this sort of supernatural, like, gift, like a superpower, basically. So you've got, you know, the first generation, you've got one who can heal people through their cooking. You've got one who can control the weather, and you got one who can see the future. And then the next generation, you've got, there's one with super hearing and one with, shape-shifting abilities, one who can make flowers bloom, one who's super strong. But then you've got Mirabelle. Now, Mirabelle is the primary character in this movie, voiced by Stephanie Beatriz, who is wonderful. And her whole thing is she doesn't have a gift. They went through the whole thing, and for whatever reason, no one really understands, she did not receive the same gift that every other member of the Madrigal family has received. And so she's a bit of an outcast. Outcast is the wrong word. She's still a part of the family, but she's an outsider. And she's dealing with that the best she can. But when the day comes for the next child to receive their gift, she has a vision of the massive cracks appearing in the house and the magical candle sputtering and threatening to go out. She tries to tell everyone about what she's seen. Nobody really believes her. And so she takes it upon herself to sort of go on this quest to find out what's going on. And that involves, like, you know, going and finding, you know, the lost prophecy of her Uncle Bruno, voiced by John Leguizamo. He's the one, he has sort of left the family because of the impact that his prophecies were sort of having on the family and the people in the village that has grown up around this house. And, you know, the more she digs in, the more she goes and explores, the more complicated it gets. Her relationship with her family is strained. And ultimately it becomes the responsibility of, you know, the one ordinary member of this extraordinary family, to try to figure out how to save the day. Look, again, this is a very family friendly movie. I'm not going to put it, you know, it's not in the Disney pantheon, you know, but, you know, when there's 60 of them, like, there's no shame in not being number one. It's very good. Like, the songs are great. I love me some Lin-Manuel Miranda. So that's a lot of fun. The vocal performances, Stephanie Beatriz is a wonderful voice actress and she does a great job here. It really sort of captures that sort of the importance of family, and it's like what it means to be special. And it's not necessarily an outward thing. It can be as much an internal thing as anything like that. It's about relationships and the way those relationships change and evolve as we grow older, as we drift in and out of one another's lives. I laughed a bunch, some really solid jokes, a couple of great sight gags, a lot of them involving the aforementioned sentient house, which can move itself and it manages to be expressive despite not having a face, which is always really fun. And look, Rich, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, there were multiple moments where it got a little dusty in the theater because, as I previously mentioned, I'm a super soft touch. You start doing this stuff, you know, singing about feelings and all that jazz. It's like, yeah, no, I'm done. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to quietly sniffle. And when anyone looks at me, I'm going to say some variation of, no, I'm not. Encanto, super fun, like wonderful movie for families. It's one of those ones that really hits all quadrants. Like, no matter how old you are or how young you are, you're going to be able to engage with this movie and have a lot of fun. And frankly, especially this time of year, like, those movies are great. And yeah. I really think anyone, if you've got little ones, take them to see Encanto. You're gonna have a good time.
All right, let's. We got a couple of minutes here to talk House of Gucci, which, based on the previews I've seen, involves considerable chewing of scenery.
Oh my God, man! Like, I'm gonna lead with this. There's a world in which this movie could have been made, quote unquote, better. But it wouldn't have been nearly as much fun. What we have here, it's Ridley Scott's second movie in like 6 weeks, because The Last Duel got pushed due to COVID and all that, which, you know, The Last Duel bombed at the box office. We're not going to, it's those damn millennials. He calls them millennials and blames their cell phones for the reason that The Last Duel he's 84 years old. Like, he's an absolute crank, and I am here for it. Anyway, so we have House of Gucci, which is based on the real story of the tragic death of a prominent member of the Gucci fashion empire, sort of the family that started that business. I'm not going to go into the plot because, honestly, man, like, it doesn't really matter. You've got Lady Gaga, like you said, just gnawing away in, like, her sort of Russian Count Chocula accent. It's just spectacular. She's really just going for it. She's got, you know, she plays a woman who sort of almost by chance winds up meeting Maurizio Gucci, played by Adam Driver. Who is going for it in a completely different way. You know, they wind up falling in love and getting married despite the disapproval of his father, played by Jeremy Irons, who does not care about your Italian accent and will not be bothered by it. So his dad is, his dad is played by Jeremy Irons. And then the brother, Aldo Gucci, played by Al Pacino, because of course.
Yeah, why not?
You'll be shocked to know just a wackadoo accent out of him. But the highlight is Aldo's son Paolo, played by Jared Leto, who Jared Leto's all over this thing. Like, he's got like stringy hair, bald on top.
Dead in the eyes.
Oh my God, I don't even know what he's doing. Like, it's like, there are little groups of actors, like, you know, Lady Gaga is in a movie with Adam Driver and Jeremy Irons. You've got Al Pacino kind of doing his own thing, and no one knows what the hell Jared Leto is up to. But they all just come together in this magnificent, just train wreck. It's just so off the rails in the best way. It's like they took a telenovela and ran it through Google Translate 3 times. It kind of makes sense, but it doesn't really make sense.
That's a blurb right there.
Oh my god, it's so great. And I forgot to mention, Salma Hayek is the TV psychic that Lady Gaga's character sort of attaches herself to. It's unbelievable, Rich. And, you know, there's all the intrigue of the rise and fall of the Gucci fashion empire, sort of the breakdown of the transition from a family run business to something that's a far more corporate model. The disagreements there. We get to see these characters sort of be corrupted by the money and the power that comes with ruling the roost of something like that. But yeah, I can't stress this enough. Like, I had so much fun watching this movie. Like, and like I said, like, you know, under different circumstances, if someone wanted to really commit to making, like, sort of telling the true story of this sort of dark time in the Gucci empire, like, yes, technically you could argue that it would be a better movie.
Who wants that?
But why that? Like, it's such a bonkers story anyway,
right?
So why not just lean into that? And that's what they do. And honestly, Rich, I wouldn't have thought Ridley Scott had it in him. Like, I really wouldn't have, but he really just, and you know, and he's brought together this immensely talented cast, immensely talented and pretty much weird across the board.
It's
just packed full of these talented weirdos. And when you put a lot of talented weirdos together weird stuff is going to happen, but it's fun. And so I loved House of Gucci. I don't know that anyone expected to get what they got when they sat down to watch it. I certainly didn't. But man, am I ever glad that that is what happened.
Alan Adams, a foursome for us on this week's Pass the Popcorn.